And welcome to You Should See the Other Guy, the podcast where we watch the most romantic movies ever created and tell you why two souls across planetary space were meant to be bound together as one. Or that's what we're doing this week anyway. I'm Jennifer.
I am Samantha.
And I'm Sadie.
And we have a special guest. Our guest is Abby Montiel from the Proposal episode and another episode that I forget.
Yay. Hi, thank you for having me.
Welcome back. And we asked Abby what she wanted to talk about. Well, actually, Abby DM'd me on Instagram and said, you need to do the Venom movies. No, and I was like, we need to do the Venom movies.
I feel like Samantha's the only person. Like, I'll send a lot of people a lot of dumb shit and they'll just be like, haha. But Samantha, like, actually pays attention to it. And she's like, yeah, like, why not?
That's why a picture of the Samantha is our queen.
Yeah. So shout out like Super Yaki. It's like this t-shirt store and they were selling a shirt that said Venom 2018 is a rom-com. So I had to let Samantha know because it's on brand and she said yes somehow. So here I am.
Venom 2018 is a rom-com, but it's only really the meet cute of the extended rom-com that is the Venom duology thus far. And here to tell us what happens in Venom 1 is young Sadie.
I'm Sadie. I'm Sadie. What holds me back from fully getting into the Lord of Darkness is glitter and vibes. Glitter and vibes.
I'm Sadie.
Glitter and vibes.
And I'm Sadie.
Please actually clip this out of context. Thank you, Samantha.
I'm Sadie.
And I'm Sadie.
Glitter and vibes, vibes, vibes.
So, yeah, I'm just going to do a super duper really quick recap of Venom number one, because, like, I'm sure everybody and their brother knows the premise of Venom, and it's not really super important because, again, this is just kind of, like, meet cute stuff. But anyway, we are introduced to Eddie Brock, played by Tom Hardy, and he is a hotshot broadcast news bimbo baddie. He has a hot girlfriend named Anne, played by Michelle Williams, in, like, probably her only comedic role ever. And he's great. Life on top of the world. He's a great girlfriend, great job, really vibrant in San Francisco. But he decides to be super combative with this interviewee played by Riz Ahmed, whose name is not important. It's just Riz Ahmed. He's not super important to our purposes. And Riz Ahmed owns a super evil wee-woo company, tech bad mogul. I really don't know what the company is. It's not important. But it's trying to harness evil alien powers, aka Venom, the symbiote, and his evil mean big brother Riot. And so the important thing to kind of know about Venom and like how he works is that he cannot survive on Earth, in Earth's atmosphere on his own. He needs a host in order to thrive and like actually have a chance of taking over the world and whatever. And so kind of a big contention is that whenever they try to introduce a host, it kills the host. Like Venom can't, he hasn't found a match. And so that's kind of like part of it. And so Riz Ahmed like kidnaps like houseless people on the street and like otherwise quote unquote people who won't be missed by society, and uses them as like fodder to try to get the aliens to match up. But then Eddie breaks into said facility and is thus infected by Venom, and it is, surprise, a perfect match. It's a match made in heaven. And so most of the rest of the movie is not super important. Riz Ahmed is infected by Riot, but Venom kills Riot, and then at the end of the movie, Venom and Eddie kind of come to an understanding. They're sharing Eddie's body and they are kind of riding off into a very uncertain future of like, okay, now we're kind of stuck together. What are we going to do about it? And so that's kind of the meet cute. It's a bit of a match made in hell at the beginning. But by the end, it's just kind of like, okay, what now? Enter Venom 2.
Was Sadie really skippy for anyone else? I'm cutting this part out.
Yeah.
Me talking about the skippiness. I'm sure on the local version of it, Sadie, it's fine. Like, it'll upload normal, but just
it happened
FYI.
Like suspiciously when Sadie got to joining with the symbiote, she got like two voices.
Yeah, that was it.
Sadie, is she Venom, perhaps?
Oh my god, the Michelle Williams Venom, that was, like, camp. Like, that was giving us, like, the what the green M&M, like, can't anymore. And I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah, Michelle Williams Venom should be a Drag Race guest judge. So at the start of Venom 2, let me just excise anything from my recap that Sadie has covered about the premise. So if the first movie was their meet cute, the second movie is kind of the rest of the rom-com. We start out with Venom and Brock having reached an uneasy understanding that they won't kill good humans, even though Venom needs to eat brains, and therefore he has to eat a lot of chocolate and chickens to try to make up for it. And at the start of the movie, Venom helps Brock crack the case of where serial killer Cletus Cassidy, played by Woody Harrelson, has buried his bodies. Elsewhere in Tom Hardy's life, his ex-girlfriend, Anne, is engaged to Dan, whom Brock and Venom both don't like. And then Brock and Venom end up having a falling out because the latter would like to eat people and the former is still facing police scrutiny for the events of the first film and for generally behaving like a weirdo who mutters to himself constantly in a bizarre American accent that I love. Cassidy is about to die by lethal injection after Brock's expose, but he bites Brock's hand during a final hour, last meal farewell, and gets a little bit of that juicy symbiote in him. And that chunk of Venom, alternate title for the second film, becomes Carnage, who helps Cassidy break out of prison, free his girlfriend Shriek, who screams very loud and with whom he shares a traumatic past, blah, 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 who cares? And then Anne convinces Venom after a very brief queer-inspired coming out rave scene to go back to Brock. And he does, but so that they can stop Carnage. Carnage, as qua Woody Harrelson, takes everybody hostage in a big church where it would be convenient to have a CGI battle with no extras. There is a big final battle. Ultimately, Venom and Brock throw Shriek into a bell to create a bunch of sound, which is one of two symbiote weaknesses along with fire, separating Carnage from Woody Harrelson long enough for Venom to eat Carnage. And then the cop whom Shriek gave hearing loss to in the prologue that I skipped over in this summary has blue flashing eyes, and I don't know what that means. And then Venom and Brock run away to a beach together, and Venom licks Tom Holland's Spider-Man's face on a TV screen in a scene that I also did not understand. The rest of the movie, I comprehended. And this was Venom too.
Yay.
So Abby, are you like Sadie, Venom pilled?
Oh my god, yes. So I need to set the scene. Also, I don't know if you guys remember, but the first Venom came out the same weekend as A Star Is Born, and there was like internet drama because the little monsters were like slamming, I think, Venom with bad reviews so that A Star Is Born's box office would be better. And I'm like enraged they didn't do that with Let There Be Carnage and House of Gucci, because the opportunity was right there. But I remember I went the day it came out with some friends. And if anyone who's listening, they're like Marvel girlies, like, I don't support the lifestyle, but like, I love you and I want you to be happy. So whatever. But I was kind of down because I like how Sony, ever since Marvel, the MCU got Spider-Man, they've just been adapting like the sweatiest, most like batshit properties, like this and Morbius. So I was like, okay, I'll go. And I had no idea. I thought it was going to be just like a straight up horror movie. And I was like, wait, this is insane. And then I immediately after that, I went to A Star Is Born, where I ended up meeting like one of my very best friends at the time, Kate, because we agreed to see it. We are writing for the same place. And so we just got really obsessed with both of those movies. Like, we watch Venom every Pride Month because it just became like a running joke, but then it wasn't a joke anymore. And once I, like, it became very clear it was going to be like a rom-com. I don't know. I feel like a lot of superhero movies these days, it can be like very formulaic, or they want to do like the like Dark Knight, like kind of bleak tone. And there's not a lot of room for like experimenting with genres and tone, or like doing a fun kind of standalone movie. And like, there's not enough queer movies, and there's not enough queer rom-coms. And like, the Venom cinematic universe is all of those things. I love like gay weirdos, enemies to lovers, rom-com. So yeah, a classic.
Tom Hardy deserves an Oscar for this way before Gaga should ever get her Oscar, in my opinion. I'll fire that shot across the bow. And you're way more charitable to the Marvel girlies than we have been on podcast. But his performance is amazing. When you think about it, he's like, he's playing to himself on a tape that he has pre-recorded that's playing like on set. And like there's one moment in Venom 2 where like, I think like Venom and he are separated, but he's like, what would Venom do right now? And he sort of mutters something that's like half in his own accent and half as like the residual voice of Venom he still feels like he can access. And it's like, there's no moment in A Star Is Born where anyone is acting to that level, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm a Star Is Born apologist, but I agree. I was listening to a review of it, I think it was on NPR, and they described his Venom voice, which I think is better this time. Like, I feel like the first Venom movie is half them kind of trying to launch a franchise, and then Tom Hardy doing like whatever the fuck he wants, and then Andy Serkis was just like, do whatever the fuck you want. But they were like, no, it's like Laurence Olivier doing like Shakespeare soliloquies on Molly is what the Venom voice sounds like now, and I'm obsessed with it.
Amazing. And I love that the second one kind of made the like the LGBTQ theme like pretty literal with Venom like going
Yes, like the allegory of Venom as like a Shakespearean character is so fucking true. Like, I just, one of the things that I love about this is just kind of like the overtness of their relationship. Like, whether or not it's like what we kind of like quote unquote believe is like a normal, regular romantic relationship, like what they have is like definitely deeper than friends. It is an innate knowing of one another. Like, they are in love. I'm sorry. They're in love. Please.
The 5-minute makeout was like a little much, but love is love.
But the hardcore full frontal sex scene was perfectly in tune.
Oh, that I loved. That was perfect.
Actually, more monster fucking in movies always. If yeah, Venom counts
like
as a monster.
Like Shape of Water walked so Let There Be Carnage could fly.
Yeah, this should have been, there should have been unsimulated sex in this with Tom Hardy and a Venom prop. Oh, God. Jen, what did you make of the Venom cinematic universe? Was this your first exposure?
Well, that's, wait, going back from the point, I just said, I think we're going to get there in the next movie, right? We are moving towards the Venom polycule universe because Venom and Eddie Brock, Tom Hardy are starting to work out their issues. Clearly, they're both super attached to Anne, who can't let go of them. And Dan also is fascinated by Venom. And while he doesn't like Eddie, is into this whole thing enough that he was willing to put his life on the line in the final battle there, you know? Just very queer culture, all of it. The, like, running to your ex's, side as soon as they call and they're battling a serial killer in, like, an abandoned huge cathedral. Yeah.
Okay, Abby, I don't know if you, like, I know that these losers haven't seen it, but have you seen Spider-Man No Way Home?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man needs and deserves for Venom to be, he needs to be in a throuple with Venom. Like, I've said it. There we go. it's laid out. It has to happen. Because in Spider-Man No Way Home, he says, like, oh, guys, I don't have an alien. Like, why haven't I had an alien yet? And it's like, you can't have an alien, Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. And it is Tom Hardy's Venom. Please. I saw that news and I was like, the news that Andrew Garfield was open for it. Like,
Andrew Garfield. That sassy man is just trying to set himself up for a makeout with Venom here, right? I mean, just hearing this, that's immediately my assumption.
I was doing research, and apparently, like, according to, because I know, like, they had some issues with, like, rebooting Spider-Man in general with Andrew Garfield, but the studio was all, like, shitty after he was like, oh, I'd love to pay, like, a bi Peter Parker. And, like, it's in the rules that Spider-Man can't be gay, but he can deal drugs as long as, like, Venom is making him do it. That's canonical. But now that the multiverse is open, like, anything is possible. Can he be gay
if Venom is making him do it?
I feel like Sony got for, like, some weird shit. Like, just get away from, like, Kevin Feige, and we can have, like, Anne and Dan, and, like, I feel like Andrew Garfield's one of those guys that's, like, pro kissing your friends on the mouth, too, so he would just be, like, down, and I think we should do it.
Yeah.
Isn't Marvel just, like, swallowing this up, though? Like, don't Sony and Marvel have to, like, have a tense renegotiation of the Spider-Man character rights every 2 years?
Yes. I feel like Sony doesn't like them because, like, I didn't stay to watch the post-credit scene, whatever, in No Way Home because that movie's really long. But apparently, like, Venom gets snapped back for a second and then he leaves, like, some of his goo behind and then he snaps back. So they can leave, like, my ADHD sons alone and, like, make a new Venom, but then Andrew Garfield could go, like, to this universe.
Yeah, and it's funny what you said about, like, Sony tapping into the sweatiest characters. I think some of this is, like, Sony has to make, like, some of these movies at a certain cadence in order to maintain the rights, or else they, like, lapse back to the original rights holder, and then Marvel just, like, snaps them up in a second because they are the rights holder. So it's like Sony just being like, who can we make? I guess Garbage Pail Man, like, 2024 will be our headline marquee feature.
It's just so nice because, like, when you think back on it, like, Marvel just had, like, their 10th exclusively first gay moment, but, like, they're like, oh, they kissed with Brian Tyree Henry. Love Brian Tyree Henry. And he was in Eternals for, like, 10 minutes and he shared one chaste kiss. And then he was like, I mean, they're all war criminals, but he was, like, really a war criminal because he helped, like, invent bombs. And he's like, war criminals can have husbands too, guys.
Yeah, he did Hiroshima, right? In Eternals or something.
That scarred me for life. So, like, Marvel's so, like, chaste, heteronormative, like, whatever will sell to mass audiences. And then Sony's doing their weird little, like, Marvel queer polycule, like, very horny shit. Like, Cletus and Scream, they were giving, I don't know if you guys ever watched Parks and Rec, but, like, when Ron and his ex-wife would, like, suddenly hook up for an entire night and just get sent to jail.
Sammy too! I lit the bed on fire. I've been there.
Like, it's just given me, like, I feel like, not to do another rant about, like, the state of, like, IP-driven filmmaking, but I just find it really depressing sometimes and, like, very, like, restrained. And, like, stuff like Let There Be Carnage, like, not to be dramatic, but it does give me hope for, like, the future of blockbuster filmmaking. Like, that and Matrix Resurrections, it's very special to me.
I agree, and I think that Venom is so notable in part because if there was ever a property that seemed like it would get lined up for the grimdark treatment, you know, Venom already has the look. You could really see them having made this story in an incredibly different way. But in spite of all the people eating and the possession with the symbiote and the Tom Hardy's accents and the amount of sweat, it has this very light, bright, cheery rom-com tone to it that is quite delightful. And additionally, I think it's interesting, I paid for a month of Disney Plus over the holiday break. to catch up on stuff that I hadn't seen. And I tried to get into their Loki show on there. And I feel like in a lot of ways, Venom is what that wanted to be or could have been, like with Loki, like falling in love with a variant that's supposed to be himself from another universe. Like this should have been like the queerest story of all time. But instead they like really hardcore Disneyfied, like this Loki is a girl and has another name. And like, this is straight. Like, we will let Loki say one thing that like maybe indicates that he kissed a boy at some point. But Eddie Brock and Venom are just full on in a cohabitative relationship immediately.
Yeah, as a writer I know once wrote, it's time for Marvel to put up or shut up when it comes to LGBTQ representation. I'm quoting, of course, the great Abby Montiel.
I can't stand her. But yeah, I feel like there's also that thing of like what, like the idea of like what representation means and how that can be like charged and weaponized. Like, I do appreciate stuff like, I guess like Eternals and then like Single All the Way, where it's very like sweet and everyone claps when you kiss, which is what happens when I gay kiss people. So, but like, I don't know. There's just something nice about like, even if it is subtext and it's like not perfect and it's really messy, like Venom is kind of giving like when you get into your first like queer relationship and it's like very intense and like you're still like setting boundaries and seeing who's gonna play what role. And sometimes it can get like people I've known, like it can get kind of like codependent and like toxic because you're like figuring out this facet of your identity and like the gender sexual fluidity. Also, apparently Andy Serkis, did you guys see that interview where he literally calls it like Venom's coming out party?
Yeah,
because I wrote down the quotes. It was in an Uproxx interview with Andy Serkis, Triple Threat King, and he was like, absolutely, they do love each other, and that's kind of the center of the movie, is that love affair, that central love affair. Tom and Kelly, who was the co-writer, were always about Venom coming out and going to a party that was a very sort of LGBT kind of festival, really, I'd call it. And so this is his coming out party, basically. And it was like pro-immigration, like, where else are you going to get that in like a superhero movie? Into the Spider-Verse could do it, I think, but that's kind of about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, what you said at the beginning too, Abby, like it was a movie that had a tone, which is like so rare. I mean, Eternals was like, what if we took tone entirely out of a movie and found out what was left from what I heard of it?
Yeah.
And it's a huge success at the box office. It just crossed like $500 million or something. And it's like proof you can do weird experimental things and have them pay off if you put smart, funny, interesting, creative people at the helm of them.
Even the humor, like I feel like sometimes in superhero movies these days, just because it has gotten like so ubiquitous and they'll worry about like being taken seriously at award shows and stuff like that, some of the humor will be like kind of making fun of itself or being like very quippy, like so that they can get ahead of the joke. And I get that the Venom humor isn't for everyone because it's deranged, but I don't know, it just seems so confident and it's like weirdness, and that just like makes me feel a lot better about like how confident the filmmaking is in general. So that was very nice.
They also did like
sweaty
the
right word.
It's sweaty.
like Shriek, I'm sure sounds like she came. Cletus Cassidy, that has to have been lifted directly from a comic, right? Why yeah. would you name like some of the character names in this are hysterically bad, but it's played so straight. And I find that kind of delightful in contrast to a lot of the other Marvel-y movies that are trying to do this. Yeah, like to lend it some dignity to the superhero thing. So they'll sort of change villains' names or they'll put them in a like, you know, they make their suit less colorful and goofy. Like, and so this was kind of nice to just like watch everybody having big emotions and deal with a threat that is like not in the second movie, at least like Cletus isn't necessarily going to destroy the planet, but he's a serial killer named Cletus Cassidy, who's played by Woody Harrelson. And it's just refreshing on all counts.
Yeah. If Chris Nolan were making this, in order to make Carnage, in order to name Carnage, there would have had to have been like a news report about Cletus Kasady escaping from jail where the Chyron was like, mass carnage at jail as, you know, convicted felon escapes. And someone would have to look at it and be like, we need to get this carnage to stop or something. And like, that would be how he got named or something. And I like in this one, it's just like, hi, I'm Carnage. And he's like, okay, sure.
I think, doesn't first Woody Harrelson get to like say the title of the movie menacingly to Tom Hardy?
Yeah. Beautiful. It's also like not even a phrase. I mean,
oh my God. Also that scene that was straight up the, who does number two work for from Austin Powers 2, where, Eddie and Venom are having an argument and they like bust into like the women's bathroom. And like, yeah, I was losing it. That lady who got down and fully touched her head to the floor to try to look under the stall to see what was going on. I was like, I mean, I kind of get it. Like, I would be curious.
But no, you hold up your hair. Jesus yeah, Christ. Really like,
I mean, what is a gender neutral bathroom for, if not for
Except for symbiotes.
Yeah.
So much of it too is in Tom Hardy's performance where like the humor of it, like there's some snappy, crackly dialogue, but so much of it is just about watching him with like no sense of vanity, just like mutter his way through this insane shit and just like get progressively more deteriorated as like an argument or a conversation gets more and more ridiculous. He is just fully committed to it in this totally endearing way. It's fantastic.
1000%. I'm so glad they let him have such a hand in the writing and creation of Let There Be Carnage, because you can tell it really paid off.
Yeah. Honestly, everyone is committing like 1000%. Like Michelle Williams, she, to be fair, like we did need a little bit more of like Anne and Scream. I feel like that's one of my only like major critiques, but you have like these prestige actors and they're just like squirming for 90 minutes straight doing like screwball romantic comedy and they like don't give a fuck. They love it.
Yeah. Like Michelle Williams got to have fun like in a role for once.
Do we think his Venom voice sounds a little like Bane too? I feel like there's a touch of the Bane in it.
Well, there's probably like structural limits to Tom Hardy's voice, right? Like he's trying.
Yeah, he can only. So wait, does Andy Serkis do like mocap for Venom or something?
Does he? He directed it, right? I was that makes sense when I saw the credits.
I feel like he does a lot of mocap because he did like the Planet of the Apes remix too. So yeah. Maybe that was part of it.
My brother was super into those. So I have seen, I've been forced to sit through a good bit of Andy Serkis as Caesar in Planet of the Apes. And it is quite an astounding performance.
Andy Serkis probably feels like he's a human symbiote hybrid because he spent like his whole life being like computer cartoons.
Yeah, he's perfect. Oh, apparently Tom Hardy agreed to it because his son loved the character so much. So it was like genetic sweatiness.
Oh my gosh, he's married to the chick he was in that BBC Wuthering Heights series with, right? So yeah, sweatiness was like built into that family. Like he was Heathcliff in a very Tom Hardy-ish fashion. I watched it years ago.
Can I ask who plays Dan and where I've seen him before? I feel like they put him often as like punchable boyfriend or something.
Good. He's such a good other guy. This movie has everything.
Dan Lewis.
Reed Scott. he was in Veep.
Oh, that's right. I guess maybe my other guy for Venom would be the bodega owner. And then Venom can just have a regular supply of chocolate coming into the bodega and moonlight as the owner of a convenience store. Miss Chen.
Yeah.
That was a pretty sweet
life. Honestly, ever since Jen said like the polycule, I'm like, no, we've got to just like keep adding people in here. Like Mrs. Chen can come too, and Andrew yes. Garfield, Spider-Man. And I think we're up to 6 now.
I think so. I think that's how it's going to have to progress in the continuing Venom cinematic universe too. Because I think Venom himself, or does Venom ever, what are Venom's pronouns?
I think Venom's a he. They were he, yeah. he him. on his Instagram bio.
Okay.
Location I'll go inside with that. Eddie Brock's body.
Venom.
Yeah.
It's kind of
gender fluid king.
Did they know about pronouns? I mean, the symbiotes as a whole until they got here. Yeah, I don't know. But Venom definitely, the Venom shows such a preference for Anne in the first movie. And I think that by that point of the first movie, at least, if Venom could have chosen, Venom would have stayed with Anne. But unfortunately, the Anne-Venom combo was too powerful to be allowed to exist in this world. And I guess Venom and Anne's physiology wasn't long-term compatible. So he had to go back to Eddie. But that was to the benefit of all of us, because now we get the polycule.
On the polycule idea, I just had a staggering vision, my eyes closed, and an acid trip scene flooded my mind. So, you know, the like Wachowski's orgy scenes in Sense 8?
Yes.
I had a vision of like symbiote human orgy, and there's like a drum beat going. So they're always flashing in and out of like human form and symbiote form, the yes! tentacles appearing and disappearing.
And it's at the rave.
Samantha, yes. Who do we have to write to make this happen?
We need to get Andy Serkis and the Wachowskis to create Venom 3 and put an end to all media once and for all.
I think we would fix it after that.
Nature would heal. I feel like it would reset human storytelling if we did that.
Damn.
I think it would destroy like NFTs as well, which I'm also terrified of. And I think Venom would fucking hate. But we need to like rebalance Hollywood. I have another polycule suggestion. So I've heard some people say like the Venom movies sometimes give like early Sam Raimi a little bit, which I love. But I am kind of like a Spider-Man 3 apologist, because like, yeah, there was too much studio meddling and it's a mess, but it's very like fun. And I think it's still more ambitious than like what a lot of blockbusters are doing these days. So I really loved the Venom in that movie, who like literally went to a church and like was praying to God to kill Peter Parker. Like, that guy was so dramatic.
Topher Grace.
Yes, he would fit in perfectly.
I, too, am a Spider-Man 3 apologist. I think at the time I was like, what's going on, Sam Raimi? And now I know what was going on. But now I'm just happy that Spider-Man 1 and 2 were legitimately great movies, followed by like one camp classic that's probably better than like whatever good version of Spider-Man 3 there was, you know? But yeah, no. Gosh, I love it. And I love that it avoids Marvel dialogue tendencies, even if it's produced in association with Marvel. Like, if Marvel made this, it would be like they'd bite a guy's head off and Tom Brady would be like, did we just bite a guy's head off? And then Venom would be like, yes, we just bit a guy's head off. And that would be like what was supposed to be funny. And it's like, that's not funny.
Like, we need to protest if Marvel tries to make some like sanitized, like quippy, like weird Venom. Like, we need to contact GLAAD, because that like is not fucking okay with me. But they should also leave Tom Hardy alone. So I don't
did
know.
Venom, I wonder if this got nominated for a GLADdy. What did we learn got nominated for a GLADdy the other day?
Oh, it was that hideous. Samantha, I am actually
I love you, man,
this week. Because fucking that Rush's Tom Sawyer has been persistently stuck in my head. And I see Jason Segel's fucking face as that obnoxious character singing along to it. And I hate it. And knowing that that was nominated for a GLAAD award, Venom deserves the GLAAD awards, not Andy Samberg for whatever happened in that atrocity that we watched last week.
Oh my God, Eternals got nominated.
Yeah,
over
there's
Venom.
There's too much overt LGBTQ representation now for Venom to get nominated. We need to dial back. Oh, but Andrew Garfield is nominated indirectly for Tick, Tick, Boom, which is about Rent. and not the invention of TNT, as the title might lead you to believe. I've not seen that.
It's actually frustratingly okay, considering like all the Lin-Manuel Miranda backlash that he's been getting the past year. It's a good movie, but I think that's also a good lesson. Like, Venom 3 should be a musical, because Tom Hardy can sing, right?
Yes. I mean, he could definitely sing in the context he of Eddie Brock and Venom. Oh, I'm so taken, Sadie, with this idea. Even the chickens can have a song. I feel compelled
to ask you, definitionally, this is like more a rom-com than it is any other genre of film, right?
Oh, 5,000%. This is like much more of a rom-com than the movie we did last week. I love you, man. Like, the genuinely, yes, this is like all jokes aside, this is 100% a rom-com, because like the core of both of the Venom movies is the relationship between the two characters in a way that is unique to romantic relationships. So like, if you think about, there's other shows like buddy cop comedies and things like that, but like, with this show, with this movie, that's like the central arc of it is Venom and Eddie learning how to be with one another and like share space, i.e. a body. And like, that's what I love about this series, franchise, universe, is that at its core, it is a rom-com. It's about two characters being able to, you know, choosing each other, choosing to be with each other, whether that's like romantically or like literally living in a body together, over anything else. And so like, that's how you come, like over the course of these two movies, it's one narrative romantic arc of like the meet cute, being together, finding out how to work through differences, the coming apart and coming back together again and being better for it and deciding like, I actively choose you. It's so good.
Yeah, it gives me hope that like people are open to bizarre Frankensteinian genre mashups, you know, like having just written a horror comedy reality TV book, like as I look at early reactions to it, there are definitely people who like totally vibe with it because they've already been like venom pilled in their brains and are like open to that kind of like straddling of like comedy, horror, and sentiment. But then some of my favorite reactions are people who are like, I have no idea what I just read, but I don't think I've read anything else like it. And I think I liked it, you know, like that is fun to me. And that's kind of the spot that Venom itches, is just like, wow, you know, like, yes, like outside of big budget theatrical releases, you can find plenty of stuff that straddles genre. But how rare is it to find something on the big screen that like truly like is like combining some of column A, column B, and column C into its own little blend? Like, I feel like Happy Death Day might have been the last time I felt as passionately about like a horror comedy as I did about the Venom franchise. And so, yeah, it seems like only once every few years does something like this come along.
That's true. Did you know like sometimes people like program films in succession with like the release of their book? So you should just like force everyone to watch Venom, Let There Be Carnage, and then just sit down and read your book like in one sitting.
I feel like, you know, this may be solipsism talking, but I feel like all of media is coordinating to prime people for Patricia Wants to Cuddle, because Yellow Jackets was also very much in the sweet spot of women surviving in the wilderness while managing their relationships with each other. And people liked that. So if you liked Yellow Jackets, dot, 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 suggested for you, dot, dot, dot. But yeah, no, it's like been encouraging to me as a viewer, especially like with horror stuff, because like horror can be like an automatic like switch off for some people. But it seems like the kids are all right in terms of being open to horror, maybe not just like pure undiluted horror, but like horror elements creeping into their media, which we love to see.
Okay, I do have a question. I think Jen brought this up in the chat earlier, but Yellow Jackets got me thinking, like, what celebrity or fictional character do you guys think would be a good match with a symbiote? Because I think Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Taylor was a...
Taylor Swift already has a symbiote.
Top choice.
She can... I feel like she has to consume flesh or something, or like how else would she have gotten those two like good albums out in 1 year?
Right?
There's no other explanation. Oh my God.
I was thinking too when she... Well, when watching Venom 2 this week, when Venom is saying, oh no, about Carnage, it's Red One, we're fucked. I was like, Red, Taylor Swift, oh my God, all the pieces are there.
This is just like Jake Gyllenhaal, like his inner monologue.
Jake Gyllenhaal symbiote, if one would even accept to join with him, would definitely get its ass absolutely kicked by Taylor Swift symbiote. God, sidebar, did you guys read that other horrifying essay on Medium, the Me and the Movie Star one about the intern who got, you know, nothing illegally was done, but just kind of mind fucked and by who was clearly implied to be Jake Gyllenhaal, and that's what all the details match up with?
No.
Because, wow, I just, you know, used to think he might be a likable guy, and I think that Taylor Swift was right all along, she told us, on behalf of probably like many other young women.
Yeah, it would be like, I feel like Carnage and Cletus, they just enabled each other's worst impulses, and that's why they kind of self-destructed, and I feel like that would be similar if a symbiote went inside Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
Is it too soon to suggest that John Mulaney may have a symbiote?
Wow.
Oh my God. Now maybe. I want him to do the Venom voice.
Wasn't he in the Spider-Man one, the cartoon Spider-Man?
Spider-Pig.
What's the...
Yeah, I could
see
that.
Oh, he was Spider-Pig. I never even realized that.
Nicolas Cage was in that too.
So who's... I was distracted by Nicolas Cage's noir Spider-Man at the time. Okay, I'm looking up how many, because I wanted to know what other colors of symbiotes that there are. So we definitely have canonically white, green, yellow, Venom is black, Carnage is red. What is the difference? Why does Venom says that because it's a red one that they're screwed? But okay, also you guys answered this for me in the summary, I think. So Carnage came to be because Cletus got like a little bit of the Venom juice in his mouth when he bit Eddie Brock. Okay, so that's why, because when Carnage started calling Venom father and nobody else addressed that, I was like, are we just not going to talk about the Venom deadbeat dad storyline going on here?
Carnage had bad vibes.
We were cheated because in the comics, literally Eddie is pregnant with Carnage. And like Eddie is pregnant with Venom's child and gives birth to Carnage. Like is pregnant. Canonically.
Okay, I didn't think that I could be mad about the way that this movie went, but now I really feel that we were robbed from a Tom Hardy pregnancy and birth scene.
We exploring the rich cinematic territory last dove into by Arnold Schwarzenegger in Junior. Abby, Sadie, has this been memory hold before you were able to hear of it?
What year did that come out?
It was a late 80s or early 90s. Jen, you remember this, right?
Yeah, I vaguely do. It all kind of runs together because there was that one, he was in Twins with Danny DeVito, right? And then it was called like Mr. Mom or something, the one where Arnold carried the baby, right?
That was Junior. He's okay. It's like an experimental research scientist becomes the world's first pregnant cis man.
Yes, that was a cornerstone of the Danny DeVito cinematic universe. Excuse me. So yes, absolutely.
It was directed by Ivan Reitman, also Jason Reitman's dad, I believe. We could have done Junior, maybe but Carnage is already born. I was going to say they could do it in 3, but that's sad to me. Now I'm sad, Sadie.
Yeah, because then Carnage would have really gotten short shrift there. I mean, could Carnage help? that like Carnage was born from Cletus Cassidy's saliva mixing with a drop of Venom, the tragedy of existence.
I think Venom Let There Be Carnage is also the rare superhero movie that is also a pro-choice film. Like when Venom just bites off Carnage's head, he said, fuck them kids.
He said like the vibes were off.
I like that they went there because they were leaning hard on the trying to give a sympathetic villain backstory of like, oh, Cletus Cassidy was abused and that's why he had to murder like 70 people and bury them in a scenic Bay Area cliffside. And so I was worried that it was going to get to the end and he was going to like have mercy on him or something. And so it was so cathartic and fantastic for Venom to just be like, chomp, I need a brain.
Wait a second. So did Shriek make it through the ending of that or die as well? Is she gonna, oh, so this is X-Men stuff. Okay, I get a little bit confused because X-Men lore is so vast and deep. But I was like, this part seems very X-Men-y at the beginning with the Cletus and Shriek meeting stuff. So she is a mutant? That's what's going on here?
Yeah. I mean, she has a super... Her she shrillness can... is supernatural.
What is this?
That's not just like she's a soprano or something like that.
This villains.fandom.com wiki has her listed as type of villain, mentally ill villainous.
I mean, oh my God. They need to update their terminology there.
Aren't we all?
What's up with the Joel Edgerton looking motherfucker having blue flashing eyes at the end?
What is up with that?
Detective who I was convinced was Joel Edgerton in a prosthetic for 10 minutes.
It felt very like studio note to me. That's like one of the only things.
Okay, so I had that question too because I completely did not understand what that was telling me. But according to the comics, Captain Mulligan, the police guy, actually becomes one with another symbiote, and this one is Toxin, which is like Carnage's son. And so I don't know about that but I don't know if they're gonna follow that in this movie or like in this series, because it looked like that was more of between the captain and the banshee woman, Screech. I can't remember her name. So I don't know if they're gonna follow that, but yeah. That's, I think if they follow the comics, then he is now Toxin.
Damn. He's just angling to join the polycule as well, I think.
This is a multi-generational family saga. This is, wow. This is amazing.
This movie has everything.
Sorry, I was trying to think of how to phrase how to do astrology in the Venomverse of like Venom, Carnage, and what did you say the third one was called? Toxin? But we haven't met Toxin yet, so it would be impossible to do suns, moons, and risings.
Venom is a Libra. Sorry about it.
Oh. I think he gives Scorpio kind of too, though.
He does. He wears the Scorpio aesthetic, but he does also arrive on a new, previously unheard of planet and decide that he likes chocolate enough to stay.
I kind of feel like maybe Eddie Brock is a Libra and Venom is a Scorpio, and this is what happens when you put Scorpios and Libras together. Hint, it's not pretty.
Yeah.
Well, when you get into a relationship with a Scorpio,
Yes. Scorpios act like they're big and tough and gonna bite your brains out, and then you're cuddling them at night and they're like, am I okay?
Okay, for one, shut the fuck up, and for two, of course he couldn't eat Sonny and Cher because they are best friends.
I feel like, wait, so your moon sign is like who you are on the inside. So like, is your moon sign like kind of your symbiote? Because if so, I'm a Scorpio symbiote.
That makes a lot of sense. Wait, Samantha, you're like, you have an Aquarius moon, or are you Scorpio moon, Aquarius rising?
I thought I was Capricorn sun, Scorpio moon, Aquarius rising, but you'd have to ask Corey, the keeper of my chart. She she'll unfurl it from her scrolls.
I was thinking anyway about the shared at important places in the chart, Aquarian-ness and Scorpio-ness of both Abby and Samantha here. And I see how you all vibe.
Yeah. Speaking of vibing, Abby, we talked a bit about it off air, but your Yellow Jackets thoughts?
Yes. I think if they should introduce a symbiote in season two. I don't think they will, but they could hint at it. I loved Yellow Jackets. It is lost for Swifties. It was so fun. Shauna and Jackie did want to kiss each other. We love to... The altar was scary, but I support her. We need more cannibal lesbians in Congress, and it was really fun.
Do you think that...
I think Lottie has a symbiote.
I think so as well.
I think
She got symbioted immediately in the seance, if not before.
Well, you think the French-Canadian guy was a symbiote?
I feel like, yeah, he must have been... I think that he was already symbioted by whatever is like the spirit of the forest and the spirits of the earth and sky that Lottie now thanks when they eat.
Wait, you guys know what's really fucked up is I'm like roughly the exact same age as Shauna's baby, who they probably eat. So
Abby,
that's gonna be a mind fuck next season.
Because that's definitely, they absolutely are gonna eat that baby. We're all in agreement about that, right?
It's not that much meat. So I feel like either like the baby just like dies or it's like a ritualistic sacrifice.
That's what I'm kind of wondering, is if that's their reason for eating each other at all. Because at this point, so whatever is going on has been asking through Lottie in French to spill blood. And they actually did that at the end of the Doom Coming when Shauna, they didn't fully murder him, but she cut Travis a little bit, like in the stump sacrifice place. And then that bear came out of the forest and gave itself to them. And then by the time that we see the pit girl or whoever running through the forest and getting, they're all wearing like a lot of kind of intense animal hides. So are they even starving by that point, or are they just full on like performing human ritualistic sacrifice and cannibalism to like serve the spirit of the forest and like, you know, encourage it to continue gifting them with sustenance?
Okay. So my coworker did an interview with the showrunners, and they said they really wanted to kind of like toe the line in terms of like whether it was supernatural or whether it was just like the result of like all of that trauma they were going through in the woods and like starvation. So I think like you could kind of read it either way for now. The only thing that keeps tripping me up is like the French thing, because that's like the only thing I'm like, there's not really another rational explanation, but I kind of hope they keep towing that line because I think it's like a lot more interesting.
Yeah,
same. And I hope they don't pull a Lost and make it all a dream that Shauna had.
That would be terrible.
And then she wakes up and makes like a waffle for her kid or something.
Jeff scratches his head.
I do know one thing. I'm literally going to eat Sadie if she doesn't start watching Yellow Jackets soon. I will roast you on a rotisserie.
Okay, I'm getting to it, guys. Please stop bullying me. You have no idea how many pots my hands are in. You don't know how many ducks I need to get into rows. I'm getting to it. But I've been dragging my feet because I just hate it when bad things happen to people. And so I'm nervy because it looks like a lot of bad stuff happens and I get sad.
You have to get through the bad things happen to everyone at the end of the first episode and beginning of the second. And then after that, they're just in a bad situation, you know, but it's like, I don't know. Is my attempt at being comforting here successful?
Sadie is a better person than me because like I like how it worked out at the end where it's like they're building towards a point where it would like psychologically make sense for them to eat people, but going into the finale I was like, yeah, I want to finally see them eat some people. Because, like, I don't know. I just think it's such a good pilot. Like, just, like, the slow reveal. I do have a theory about Pit Girl, if it's not Sadie, if she doesn't watch it soon. But that's okay.
Sadie, are you troubled about spoilers? Can our listeners fast forward through spoilers? What's your theory about Pit Girl, Abby? I have one of my own. I want to know if they match up.
Okay. So, you know how, like, there were those two, like, JV girls? I think their names were, like, Akilah and Mari.
Yes.
They'll get, like, a lot more lines than the other kind of, like, you know, like, kind of background JV players who will kind of, like, the size of them will fluctuate as the scene requires. But I feel like now that we have season two, we're going to kind of hopefully build up those characters some more. So then it would still be, like, impactful when Mari died, but it wouldn't be, like, super emotionally draining. Although I do think because they were out there for 19 months, I think that's, like, the second winter pretty close to when they get rescued. So that's going to, like, be a couple seasons before we get to that point.
Agreed. I also thought Mari is a good candidate because she's one of the few who's, like, not a super main character, but who actually has a name and there's some emotional stakes there. I've also been wondering, because Javi is still fucking missing after the shroom doomsgiving ceremony.
Javi got eaten by the bear.
Well, I've seen people think that, like, Javi was the bear, which I don't think so, though, because they have, like, the pelt of the bear. But I wondered if, and some people thought that Javi was Adam, which I thought was ridiculous because, like, Shauna would know who he was, right? I think Javi might be Pit Girl.
I regret to inform you my theory that, are we saying Pit Girl is, like, the person who's being roasted in the pilot?
Yeah.
Sorry, we should
in the pit
we shouldn't gender the person who's being cannibalized in the pilot.
I think because they fall into the pit. I thought you were saying, like, they're roasting them over a pit. It has layers, mm-hmm. like Sadie's beloved onions. I think it's going to be Van. I don't know. I think that they're setting Van and Thaisa up for, like,
The pit girl has, like, dark hair, though.
Oh.
Yeah, she's not ginger like Van is the...
Okay.
But then I saw somebody make the most, like, galaxy brain god tier theory at one point when people were arguing on a Reddit thread over whether Adam was adult Javi, and somebody posted, like, a tired Adam is grown up Javi, wired Jessica is grown up Javi, like the reporter fixer that Misty kidnaps in the basement, trans Javi. I accept it. Did a cat just claw you?
Oh, or was no, it I what thought I you just... all could hear it, but it was only in my headphones. Corey tried to call me. And I decline that call.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Although, Samantha, speaking of your book, I do think, like, we all know this season of The Bachelor, like, sucks. I've been using it as reading time where I'll just sit in the living room while my roommate watches and, like, get through my page count like I'm in assigned reading. But I was just thinking, like, we need, like, a Yellow Jackets or, like, symbiote situation with, like, a Bachelor cast. But although
I think
a symbiote would just burn through Clayton in, like, 10 minutes, it would still be, like, more entertaining than what we're seeing right now.
I feel like... Like, instead of a biotech company coming up with the symbiotes for, like, nefarious government military producer concepts, the producers of The Bachelor should be researching a symbiote to make The Bachelor more pliable to their producer demands. And that, honestly, is kind of the only way you could explain some of the stuff Clayton is doing. He is just putty in their hands. The producers are just like, go out there and tell all three of those women you slept with them simultaneously. And he's like, okay.
Exactly why they cast him, right? I read a recap of one of his podcast interviews on The Bachelor Reddit. Yeah. And he talks at length about how he had never watched the show before and was just game for everything. And again, I have read about 2/3 of Hannah B's autobiography, God Bless This Mess. And she was the same fucking way. When she was on as a contestant, she, like, had never been in talk therapy and openly told the producers, like, literally everything that she was thinking and was game to do whatever they wanted. And lo and behold, we got that I have had sex, but Jesus still loves me season of The Bachelorette. So they really bet on a winner with her, but Clayton so far. Ugh.
Well, they're like fully willing to cast like super boring, like NFL reject guys. I feel like I need to read the Game of Roses book, but
I read the galley. Yay. It was fun.
Like as a loser from Missouri, who is also anxious and looking for love, I'm offended. And like number two, he's not even from a small town. He's from St. Louis County. Like stop fucking lying.
Isn't he from, he's from Eureka. Isn't that close to you, Sadie?
Well, it is 2 hours away from me. So I guess, yeah, in Midwestern measurement, question mark. It's closer to St. Louis, though. It's pretty close to St. Louis.
Historic ground. Sadie, you live close to the Garden of Eden and the birthplace of Bachelor Clayton Eckard. What more could anyone ask for?
Like, if...
And he played for Mizzou. Like, Mizzou football fans shouldn't be... Like, they shouldn't be happy, like, to that extent. Like, it's just a lose-lose situation.
Like I feel like Clayton being from Mizzou is just the culmination of Mizzou having taken over my life via Sadie. We're now
no, there's
like...
another one. You know, like that girl that was like, she had the dad who was like sick. So she left Matt James's season super early, like Sarah.
Yeah. She was the one who dated, what's his name? G-E-Z. Or is that the greasy looking DJ?
Super greasy. But yeah, she was this girl I studied abroad. With she was like her big and her sorority, so like the Mizzou representation is like we have Ted Lasso. Or wait, no, he's just from Kansas City. Yeah, I don't know what we're doing right now.
Damn, you all also have just jump back into my timeline another day from like a blog where somebody had screenshotted where somebody was reading through them, but the classic and horribly continuing godmother of supernatural mystery romance or whatever, Laurel K. Hamilton, set all of her zombie raising, vampire slaying that within five books just turned into vampire fucking books in St. Louis. I had forgotten about that. I was obsessed with those in my late teens.
Kansas City gets no vampire fucking. It makes me sick.
I didn't know what a damn Mizzou was 4 years ago. And then I visited Columbia writing Real Queer America, and I thought, that was Mizzou. I'll never think about it again.
Little did you know.
Sadie followed me. I don't know why Sadie followed me, but she had rom-com in her bio, and I had been thinking about doing this concept for a podcast for a while, and I just DM'd Sadie and said, want to do this podcast I've wanted to do with my friend Jen for a while? And Sadie said, yes. I literally knew nothing else about Sadie. I think I like maybe looked at her five most recent tweets.
That's enough.
Wow. So all this time I thought that you did a deep dive into my Twitter and that you knew all of me and that you were enamored with my dazzling personality that you see unfold over a period of months and years. And then I see that it was just a couple of tweets. How dare you?
No. She went off of the vibes.
The truth is coming out.
Then meanwhile, Samantha told me, well, we won't do all rom-coms. It'll be, because I was like, what do we know about rom-coms, Samantha? And she was like, don't worry, I found an expert. And she didn't
like Ocean's 11 assembling the team. Sadie is my symbiote. And that's how I feel. Sadie is my vengeful little demon.
You're
going to
be drinking coffee-flavored LaCroix in no time.
Wait, should I read my non-mutual DMs more? I'm too scared. Maybe someone wants to host a podcast.
Yeah, the typical, like, creeps and harassment. Or maybe it could be somebody like Samantha asking you to host a podcast.
Who knows what kind of podcast your non-mutual DMs could spark.
I would say I would do a Bachelor podcast, but I think like my two remaining brain cells would just like fizz out entirely like within a month. So Okay, but one, it's like a horror reality TV show, because it's like me and my roommate, we watch Succession together and we watch Bachelor shows together, because they're both like emotional torture. Everyone's being emotionally tortured in them. And then also there's like interesting like anthropological things, like the way they went back to being like, I'm just some white Midwestern guy who wants to have like 2.5 children, but not really, and like move to LA and become an influencer. Like anthropologically, it's like fascinating. And for some reason, like listening to people kind of like make jokes about it and like analyze it, it like scratches this weird itch in my brain that like nothing else scratches. So it's probably good, I guess, because like once you get sucked in, your brain is like destroyed and mangled, so you just like keep watching and listening.
Yeah,
I agree with you. Game of Roses is maybe like, it makes me feel sane in like a world that no longer makes sense, like, because mm-hmm. they're simply like calling the modern day attention economy what it is. And it's like literally no one else really talks about The Bachelor or like modern life in that kind of way, where it's become like a gamified sport for attention so that advertisers can use you as a human puppet. And it's like wild to me. I wrote this thing for Bustle earlier this week, kind of like yes. defending the current, well, she just left the show, but the Bachelor quote unquote villain Cassidy, who like clearly just got a bad edit like every other Bachelor villain, and you know, got kicked off the show for reasons that like are just totally normal human behavior, but that in the weird like hyper conservative world of The Bachelor like make her some kind of demon to like people or whatever. And it's like wild to me, because I was reading comments on that piece or something, how many people no. like don't understand that like The Bachelor is a game, where they're just like
people watch no. it like people like watch they it think and it's they real. Like believe any of it. Oh yeah, we have no media literacy anymore.
Yeah, it's like a world where Unreal never even existed. They don't even see it through that frame. And I consistently yeah,
she
wonder.
Had to go. She was making too much drama. And it's like, don't you find it a little suspicious how the second the person who creates drama leaves, suddenly, magically, there's another girl in the house who's creating all the drama and who must be publicly pilloried and excised? It's almost like these people are chosen and presented to you in this way.
Also, like, maybe this is just me projecting. I don't know if you can relate, Samantha, but like coming from like a very like kind of like religious upbringing, like I went to Catholic school, it's kind of like immersion therapy, because it's like so obviously like the stage heteronormative like purist bullshit, but it's just like to the level of like camp that I'm like, I don't know, it's like because you can very obviously see it is like a game, and like how it kind of lines up with like all of that like social attention economy stuff, like it's just like a Frankensteinian monster that I just find really fascinating for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, it kind of like defangs stuff. I mean, I feel bad for the people still caught up in a lot of the cultures that have produced like The Bachelor and that make it mm-hmm. possible as like an object. But as an observer, I do find it like therapeutic in that way, coming out of like, you know, evangelical Christianity in America, to like, it reassures me that I'm in the good timeline of my life, you know what I mean? Because you see the way that these people talk to each other, because like most of them are like super Christian and conservative, even if it's not like explicitly talked about in the show. And like what they talk about is just like, we share the same values. What do you want in life? I want marriage. I want a family. I want kids. Like, what are your values? And it makes you realize, like, wow, like straight people who are totally wrapped up in this culture, like literally can't like talk about anything. They've just become pure ideology, you know?
It's literally like a horror comedy. Someone should write a book about this.
Someone should get on that. Should we spare Sadie more too. Bachelor talk and rate the Venom franchise?
We're going to have a special episode home, when Sadie finally watches the
previous
Bachelor.
References to this. Sadie's audio has been skipping, which has prevented her from chiming in quite as vigorously and participating in crosstalk as much as I would have liked.
You know what? I have sat back and enjoyed the sweet, dulcet tones of my guest and my co-hosts. And also, I've said the main things that I needed to say, which is that number one, Eddie and Venom are boyfriends. And number two, that they are desperately in love and that the Venom franchise is just one long masterclass rom-com in multiple parts. And then finally, that Andrew Garfield Spider-Man needs to have a movie with Venom immediately and fall in love and live happily ever after, because Andrew Garfield Spider-Man needs a Venom and Venom needs a boyfriend. So that's not, well, Venom and Eddie need a boyfriend. They need, it's yeah, the throuple. It needs to happen. Please.
Sadie, while you're at it, why don't you rate the Venom cinematic universe?
Well, Samantha, sure. I guess I can give my rating. I will give it 5 crisp, fresh lobsters out of 5. I love these movies. I have seen them both in theaters multiple times, and they never get boring to me. I love this type of Spider-Man Venom. I don't know. It reminds me of like Sam Raimi Spider-Man. Like, it's just, I love this type of superhero movie. Like, it's all about just them going crazy and doing some wild stuff, and there's some blood and there's some drama, and it's just really kooky, queer fun. I love it. And it's a rom-com.
I'll go ahead and give the Venom cinematic universe 4 out of 5 cats whose name we do not know, and
it's
who
Mr.
went uncredited
something.
On IMDb.
I feel like it started with a B or an M. I've got to try to find it again.
I'll look it up while you rate,
okay.
Jen.
I'm going to go with Samantha's rating and give Venom plus Venom 2, the Venom Cinematic Universe, 4 members of the developing polycule that we already have on board, with a 5th still to join in the coming movie. I loved it and found it very diverting and wonderful. And Tom Hardy is kind of a shitty boyfriend, but Venom is a great boyfriend and they make it work. And really, I am just subtracting that one last notch from the review now that I found out that canonically we could have had a Tom Hardy and Venom giving birth to Carnage scene that we never saw. So that's my reasoning there. But I love it and recommend it and look forward to the next installment.
At least in the first film, according to our favorite website, cinemacats.com, which we have been to before in the course of this podcast, Mr. Belvedere was played by cat actor Ziva.
Oh, excellent work, Ziva. Mr. Belvedere, you were great. I hope Venom and Mr. Belvedere become friends too. Venom is just starting to like gain affection for animals now. Sonny and Cher, you know, are like sort of his buds now that he's been living in Tom Hardy for a while. And I think that's beautiful, because Mr. Belvedere never approved of Eddie Brock, but Mr. Belvedere might get along better with Venom.
I think Venom should start like pet Instagram accounts in Venom 3. But going off of that, I'll give the Venom franchise 1 lobster, 1 Sunny, 1 Cher, 1 Eddie closet, and 1 way that Woody Harrelson pronounces the word origin for no reason. And that amounts to 5 stars. I love it. It gives me a lot of hope for like people supporting weird out there genre defined blockbusters. And I think that Eddie and Venom should kiss more.
Agreed.
According to Animal Casting Atlanta, which is Ziva's agency, this very special chocolate tabby Norwegian forest cat has better credits than most actors. There's some shade.
They didn't have
father
to come
figures,
from like that.
Spider-Man and Venom are just a few.
Wait, Mr. Belvedere is also in Spider-Man movies?
I think in Homecoming, Ziva makes a brief appearance.
Damn, Ziva.
But maybe as another cat. That cat
range.
Has range. Yeah. Abby, before I ask Jen a question that doesn't make any sense, where can people find your work and what it is you do?
I write a lot of bullshit on the internet, which is a lot of fun. You can find me at decider.com and at Abby E. Montiel on social media.
And Jen, what is a question that doesn't make any sense?
I just remembered again. Every week she hits me with some nonsense statement to lead in to me supposed to tell you guys that if you can give us a star rating on whatever platform where you listen to this podcast on, you should definitely give us the 5 full lobsters or however high they will let you go. Like, just click that button and tell us how much you love us. And if you want to talk to us, you can find us on Twitter at YSSTOG, or you can send long form emails that we rarely check but get really excited when we finally do and see that we have one to YSSTOGpodcast@gmail.com. And most importantly, to help us rent, because my God, you guys, they have jacked up the prices. I had to pay $5.99 to rent Venom 2 as opposed to the $3.99 of yore. And this is why we have a patreon.com/YSSTOG now, where if you join for $3 a month, you can join our Discord server and talk to us. And then we have tiers after that where you get increasing rewards like beautiful playlists from Sadie and getting to choose movies for us to watch.
It's my turn. I would like to thank our lovely, wonderful, fabulous symbiotes, Logan, Logan Mayonnaise, Andrew, Althea, Xenolon, Sharon, Justin, Evan, Liz, Brittany, Ace, Mara, Raimi, The Void, Heartleaf, Ave with Teeth, Hadas, Ryan, and Maddie. We love you all so much, and we would absolutely allow you to cohabitate in our bodies if you were extraterrestrial creatures who could not survive in the Earth's atmosphere.
Goodbye.